information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
And happy Friday to you on this May 19th, 2023. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. Coming up, some of our usual Friday guests. We'll wrap things up with Dan Schumacher and talk a little bit about weekend sports around 7:50. We will have Mark Jacob on at 7:30, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times. Again, another busy week to critique some of the national media coverage of some of the big stories of this week. Also, congratulations go out to Thomas from Madison, who called in during the break and knew that the Brewers had defeated the California Angels in the 1982 American League Championship Series. And so he has won two tickets to next Tuesday's game at American Family Field, Brewers versus the Astros. And we're going to do it again Monday morning at 6:50. So stay tuned for that. We'll give away two tickets again to Tuesday night's game. And so look for that. Great seats. We'd love to put your backside in them to see the game. Now, coming up this hour, we're going to talk about how the next generation of leaders is already here. Young voters and young leaders are, quite frankly, this country's best hope for pulling us back from a generation of cynicism, short-sighted budget slashing, right-wing culture wars. There is a group that is dedicated to promoting young multicultural leaders, and it has compiled a list of national names to watch. And Wisconsin State Assembly Representative Francesca Hong is on it. We're going to talk with her and Antonio Ariano, who is the Vice President of Communications for Next Gen America. And they join us right now. Good morning. Nice to have you all here.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for having me. Oh, it's our pleasure. And Antonio, we're going to talk about NextGen and the list in just a second. But when you've got Representative Hong here, and we've got plenty of matters to talk about, we're going to take care of just a smidge of business first. Fran, if I may, I've already awarded the best comment of the week to Ryan Clancy, your colleague, for referring to the new shared revenue bill as a polished turd. So I'm not asking you to top that, but Where are you on what Republicans are proposing, not just the additional aid, but the strings that are attached to it?
Inadequate and unfinished. And I think that is a common theme amongst the opposition and Republicans across the country right now. There have been no presentations of real solutions, real plans, and real people deserve better.
Yeah, without a doubt. And that watching out for everybody in Wisconsin, not just your base, is part of what makes you and other members of your caucus probably more stronger and better leaders than others that I've seen over the years. Antonio, you've recognized that at Next Gen America. Why don't you tell us a bit about the organization and then bring that to the list that you've compiled together that has Fran's name on it?
Absolutely. And just like you heard in the response from Representative right now, that's the type of leadership that we're looking for, right? Bold, fearless leadership that recognizes the real challenges that our communities face. And at NextGen is the nation's largest youth vote organization. This year, we're celebrating our 10th year anniversary of building infrastructure across the country to empower young people to recognize their full potential and come out and turn out and vote. And we've been really successful at doing so. And in Wisconsin, we're so proud to have such powerful leadership that's representing a new generation of voters. And that's why our Gen 10 list, our inaugural cohort, seeks to identify, amplify, and celebrate this talent of new representation that's appropriately advocating for the issues that really matter to us, and not playing divisive politics, but instead really diving into the issues that matter and resonate deeply with voters across the voting spectrum, and adding real life context and representation that enriches our communities is exactly what we want to do. The Gen 10 list seeks to continue to uplift activists, advocates, community organizers, elected officials across the country that are making a real difference. Young people, like you saw in the special election and as well as in the midterms, are now becoming more and more galvanized than ever before. And they recognize they have the power in their hands to drive forward transformative change. And they're voting for a variety of different issues. And it's important that we give them candidates, elected officials, representatives, local leaders that are gonna advocate for those issues. And NextGen is proud to play a pivotal role in continuing to advance that conversation.
Fran, the temptation for you is to be humble on this. Please don't. And tell me what it is about you that, you know, says, yeah, I'm good for being on this list. There's something that I'm bringing to the table that maybe not everybody brings. What is it?
A lot of gray hairs.
You,
a third grader looked me dead in the eye the last week and asked if the amount of gray hairs on my head was how old I was. And that's what I love about working with young people, with the youth. They are unapologetic, bold, and speak truth to power. And I think it's about time that we put the power behind the voices of people who are doing the work. And young people across, you know, multiple generations, I would say, or young people across multiple communities are telling their stories in powerful ways and really showing folks in action, in storytelling across different platforms, that their voices matter. And they're already doing the work. You're seeing it in the streets, you're seeing it in the news, you're seeing it in education across so many different communities. And to be recognized as participating in that and helping to build that movement is an incredible honor.
Representative Francesca Hong is with us, along with Antonio Arellano from NextGen America. We're going to take a break. We're going to get the updated weatherology forecast, and then more with our guests coming up in just a bit. You're up north. We'll continue that conversation with Representative Francesca Hong and Antonio Arellano from NextGen in just a bit here. First in sports on this Friday, the Brewers were off yesterday on their way down to Tampa Bay. They will take on the Rays for a weekend series Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, and then they will be back in town starting Monday for three against the Houston Astros. And again, on Monday, we will give away tickets to Tuesday night's game. That again will be at 6:50. Weatherology meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki is here, and we have a slightly mixed bag of weather, Jen, in that we have some cool temperatures and we have some rain, but this is not something that's going to last. We're looking for some pretty pleasant moments throughout the weekend. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, today is kind of that little outlier of a day, but we are looking at a really decent forecast coming in for the weekend. A bit on the cooler side for today as that cold front pushes through the state, lingering in the 60s for the southern half of the state, cooler in the 50s for central and west central Wisconsin today, with cloudy skies there but becoming mostly sunny in the south. Areas of patchy smoke lingering this morning from the Canadian wildfires, but that should clear out by the afternoon for most today. Looking at the weekend, a pretty short and sweet forecast, actually. It looks like a warm front pushes through, so warmer weather for all mid to low 70s for most, upper 60s around Amory and Baldwin, also along the Michigan lakefront, with sunshine across the board. And for Sunday, a high-pressure system will be in control for much of the state, so sunny skies and temperatures really not moving much from Saturday, but a warm front will start to push through west-central Wisconsin on Sunday, so still sunny skies expected around Baldwin and Amory, but warming up a little bit more so for that area before the rest of the state. Then to start out the work week, Monday still looking at sunny skies for all, with temperatures above average mid to upper 70s, as we should be around about the upper 60s, around 70 instead, as that warm front starts to fully push through here for the rest of the state. So overall, actually very slow and gradual warm up for the next several days ahead.
Jen, we've had smoke drift over from western wildfires before, but the way it got particularly sucked in by, I think it was a big low pressure system. Have you ever seen something so concentrated the way that smoke was able to be funneled in and brought right down to the upper Midwest? That was really something to see on the satellites.
It really was. Yeah, I believe about 2 years ago that actually happened here, too. And so it was one cold front after another cold front that kept pushing through and kept bringing in those wildfires. I believe that happened about 2 years ago. Yeah.
And again, folks who have any breathing issues, this might be a good time just to stay indoors a bit. And then the weather's going to get nice. Jen, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, let's continue our conversation now with Antonio Arellano and Representative Francesca Hong about NextGen America and a list of 10 of the brightest young leaders to watch. Fran is on that list as well. And you can see that list over at nextgenamerica.org. And then there's a Gen 10 list that you can find there. Can we, Antonia, just talk a bit more about the multiracial, multicultural, multigenerational approach that Next Gen has? How should I don't know that I can properly express, as a soon-to-be really old white guy, how refreshing this is. And I don't mean to turn this into a therapy session for me, but I've said many a time on this program, unfortunately, my generation, early Gen X, is what gave us Scott Walker. It's what gave us Paul Ryan. It's what gave us Sean Duffy and all of my other contemporaries. And I just love watching you guys ride to the rescue. What I'm wondering, where I'm getting at is a lot of this activism, is it a reaction to what the current generation has put out, or is it more proactive in terms of wanting to serve and wanting to stand up for yourselves?
You know, at Next Gen, we operate under a data-driven lens, and we try to innovate and modernize civic engagement to meet the moment. And in this moment, what we're seeing is the diversity of America beginning to shift. America at large, from coast to coast, is becoming more diverse than ever before. And what we want is for young people to be able to see themselves reflected in politics. And that means giving them voices, and representation that reflects them, right? And so what we're trying to do is exactly that, build through this cohort of Gen 10 leaders for the next generation, a list of powerful local community leaders, national leaders, that reflect their lived experiences. It's a unique experience to come into the halls of power, whether it be at your state legislator, local office, or at the national level, and be able to bring those experiences with you. Young people want to see themselves reflected, right? We have seen, you know, now over three cycles, 2018, 2020, 2022, record-breaking youth voter turnout. And in this last special election, the largest youth voter turnout of any summer special election in Wisconsin, where young people made a massive, massive difference. And so what we want them to know is that there is representation at every level of government, and where there is gaps, we're ready to make sure that we fill them, and making sure that America's government begins to reflect its population.
And Fran, in your case, you know, one of the things, like I said, that I noticed first off was your willingness to, as you say, speak truth to power. But unlike some folks who go into politics and they just want to be, you know, bomb throwers, and you so have that ability to, yes, do that when necessary, but then also to do the outreach and to speak up for the notion that government works when government is properly supported. Is that going to be a hallmark of your generation, is both the carrot and stick, that we're not just being the bad guy or the good guy in these discussions about public service?
I think too often, especially for younger generations, we don't get to control our own narrative. And there are more options to do that than ever before. And so when it comes to representation, when it comes to engagement, when it comes to activism, however your participation in our democratic process looks like, we know that we don't have to just do it one way. And I think what's really powerful about our diversity, about being multi-generational and multi-ethnic, is that we know that diversity is our strength. We know that diversity is powerful, and we're gonna be able to hold multiple truths. And so, and ultimately, I think so much of what drives young engagement is care. And I think that when you care, you know that you can't just go into survival mode and, as you put it, throw bombs, right? You have to make sure that the engagement is based in trusted relationships and care, and not in transaction. And when those relationships are happening, when that community building is happening, when you are, you know, one of the most powerful ways, I think I was able to meet people where they were and help be elected into office, was reaching out to folks who had not participated in the process before, who maybe didn't know what their state legislature did and how much it impacted their lives directly, and that it doesn't always look like going in the streets or saying strong words on Twitter, that engagement can look like community building, engagement can look like reaching out to your elected officials. And I think that that diversity translating to so many different levels of how young people are engaging is what's making us powerful. And ultimately, all of that is rooted in a lot of care. And so it can look a lot of different ways.
It can, but unfortunately, one of the words you mentioned is one of three words now that appear to be so triggering, which would be diversity, equity, and inclusion. And you have in the legislature, basically DEI, the letters that for those three words there are the new CRT in thinly veiled, attacks on the whole notion of equity and diversity and inclusion. You see it specifically in Republican legislation right now in Madison. So, Fran, first to you and then to Antonio, what is the significance of that? And is there, what's the best way to confront this and either defend and preserve DEI positions and programs, or perhaps look at another way of doing things? What are your thoughts on this, Fran?
Well, it's incredibly unfortunate that my Republican colleagues continue to operate from a place of fear and a place of anger. And I think ultimately they're using DEI and weaponizing it is them recognizing that when you fight power, power fights you back. And so they are bringing to the table a culture war. But I think our generation and many Americans are above that fear. They're above that anger. They want real solutions. They want to be policy driven. And what's so great about what younger generations are doing is that they are bringing policy to the forefront. I think for a long time, Democrats, unfortunately, we suffered from analysis paralysis, and we wanted to present folks with 10 points, a whole presentation instead of a one pager. And what's so great about the younger generation is that they are bringing the issues of economic security, climate justice, fighting for reproductive rights, that all of this, which is true policy, can be talked about in a real way with everyday folks. And we can work collaboratively together to build solutions. And more people are interested in finding solutions and making things better for their community than rooting ourselves in these culture wars that are absolutely coming from a place of fear and hate.
And Antonio, for you as well, the organization lifting up a list like this in the face of this new wave of attacks, for lack of a better word, talk about how NextGen is confronting this.
We're grounded in reality. And the reality is what I just shared, which is America is diversifying like never before. And there's nothing to fear. It's all about embracing the cultural richness that these different backgrounds and lived experiences bring into America, and celebrating the strengths of all different communities and how America can become even stronger because of it. The reality is that these divisive politics only seek to dilute the power of a rising new generation of an electorate, right? We're looking at, by 2024, young voters under 35 being the largest share of the electorate, outnumbering baby boomers. And this electoral bloc is the most diverse in American history. And so, our friends in the Republican Party can continue to try to ignore what's really happening in this country or try to divide us. But the reality is that those attacks have not worked. We can look at the special election. We can look at the midterm election. We can go back to 2020, where divisive politics have failed the Republican Party, and it would be in their best interest to stop trying to oppress and start trying to come to terms with the fact that America needs new leadership that embraces the changing times.
Can you just, in the short time we have left, I'm not asking you to pick on all 10, but can you mention one or two of the other people on the list, or at least some of their own traits? They're not all state legislators, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. We have a great list, and I encourage everybody to go to nextgenamerica.org/nextgen10 to check it out. But I mean, we have representatives out of Texas, like Greg Cassad, Congressman Cassad, who's doing an incredible job in really raising up immigration issues from his border state. We have representatives like Maxwell Frost, Congressman Frost from Florida, the youngest representative in Congress this cycle, and the first Gen Z representative in American history. history. So across the board, we also have incredible talent from just organizers and community leaders. I encourage everybody to go check out the full list, and so honored to have Wisconsin very well represented on the list as well.
Very well represented, to put it mildly. Fran, it's always great to talk to you, and I trust we're going to do it again. And again, don't feel the need to live up to Ryan or Representative Clancy's polished turd comment, but I know if anybody can help hold, you know, feet to the fire with what's happening in that capital, it's going to be you. So please stay in touch that way. And Tony Ariano from Next Gen America, thank you so much. It was great to learn about the organization, and we hope you come back and give us an update.
Thank you, Pat.
All right, we will take a break here, and then we will talk to Mark Jacob, former editor with Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, about how the media is covering big stories that have been in the news this past week. Then Dan Schumacher, before we wrap things up for Up North News Radio on a Friday. We'll be back.
Local radio for your community. Civic Media, broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin.
Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
And on this Friday morning, we're going to bring in Mark Jacob, former editor at the Chicago Tribune, the Chicago Sun-Times, author. And actually, I was going through, Mark, good morning, by the way. I was looking, and I thought I should do a better job of sharing your own remarks from social media. As you say, ex-editor at the Chicago Tribune and sometimes now allowed to have opinions, co-author of 8 books on history and photography. I explain why the media has been unintentionally complicit in the rise of fascism that threatens our democracy. Out of all that, the thing I want to pull out, I don't want to forget to pull out at some point, is the 8 books on history and photography, because we've never touched on that and I want to come back to it. But I have to start with where we left off with our last guest talking about a new generation of leaders. And when you, the first thing you said was you noted that the Republican answer to that is not to try to embrace youth and multiculturalism, but to try to suppress it.
Right, right. I believe it was in Wisconsin where Cleta Mitchell made her comment recently that they needed to find a way to stop college kids from voting. You know, that college students voting was a giant problem in this country. It was not the problem for the country, but the problem for Republicans.
Right.
They seem very alarmed by the fact that young people are getting engaged in democracy, which actually is one of the few things that makes me hopeful about the future. And then you also have this Republican candidate, kind of a fringe candidate, but he's getting some attention. And there are 2 separate stories in the New York Times today about him. Vivek Ramaswamy, who is a kind of a tech entrepreneur, and he's pushing a proposal that 18 to 25-year-olds would have to take a civics test in order to vote. You know, so he's trying to tamp down the ability of young people to vote too. I mean, if you gave a civics test to everyone, I think that would probably alarm Republicans. But he just wants to do it for young people for some reason. You know, yeah. It's interesting the groups, Pat, it's interesting the groups that they decide they have to do voter reform on. They always seem to be like, you know, Black people living in big cities and young people.
Well, I mean, it goes back to the so-called RNC autopsy after the 2012 election, when for a brief shining moment, they got it right and said, we are falling short on with these groups and with these issues. And it like I said, it didn't take, you know, the blink of an eye for a big chunk of the party to say, nah, we just need to find a way to keep those people down or to denigrate them and you know, gerrymander the maps and not win on ideas instead. And it just seems like so much work, you know, compared to actually doing what's good for the most people.
Yeah, it is funny you should say that. I mean, I just wonder what happened to the Republicans back then when they had that kind of one moment of illumination where they realized, oh, all voters of color are being ostracized from the Republican Party, and that's no future for us. And I mean, I remember reading that and thinking, well, this could be kind of a new era in American politics if the Republicans are actually going to try to get, you know, a more wide and diverse voter base. But just didn't happen. It was just talk.
It was. All right, let's get to some of the things the media have been up to this week. I'll get to some changes at CNN in just a moment. But I want to start with the Durham report. And I spoke at length about it a day or two ago about what a dud that it was. but you wouldn't necessarily know that from some of the major network coverage, which said things like, oh, it's a scathing report on FBI conduct. And either they said it way at the end or not at all, that a lot of those things had already been addressed, that this, I mean, this truly was a nothing burger that they were trying to sell as grade A steak.
Well, I think it's a lot like what the 2020 election was, where I was worried going into that election that there were going to be like voter irregularities and mess ups at the polling place and bad counting. And none of that happened. But the Republicans wanted it to happen, and so they wanted to use it as a pretext if they lost. So they pretended it happened anyway. And I think that the Durham report is kind of the same thing. Yeah, he found some problems with the way the FBI had conducted things. But let's be really clear here. There was a very good reason for them to be looking into Russian connections. I mean, Don Jr. admitted that he wanted, you know, dirt on Hillary from the Russians. Come on. And it's clear from the Mueller report that there were that the Trump campaign was giving voter information and polling information to the Russians. And people, I don't think they always make the connection that giving polling information to the Russians was important because the Russians were using social media in the United States to target specific groups. Specifically, they were trying to get black people to not vote for Hillary because they and so it was very valuable to them to know what parts of the country and what voter groups would be most vulnerable to that kind of disinformation. So yes, there were Russians connections, and a bipartisan committee in Congress concluded that the Trump campaign had made it clear that they welcomed Russian help. Now, does that mean that the investigation was perfect that went into it? No. And that's the thing, Pat, is that let's be fact-based. I mean, if there are problems, if Democrats do bad things, I want to know about it. Mm-hmm. And I will point it out. I don't think that, you know, but the whole what happened to this week was the Republicans had decided that no matter what the Durham report said, they were going to pretend that it was Pearl Harbor. They were going to pretend that it was the start of World War III, and their language, as you may have noticed, mimics the language that everyone else is using to describe what the Republicans did on January 6th. I mean, it's an assault on democracy. Oh, this was an attempt to overthrow our country. So they're mimicking the language that's legitimately used to describe January 6th to describe what the Durham report said. So it's they really do agree on a storyline and just go with it no matter what the facts say.
Yeah, and it really does. You bring up what is admittedly a side issue, but when you talk about the way that Facebook was essentially weaponized in 2016, right. It's why when I hear about these bans on TikTok, to me that's more xenophobia about, you know, the Chinese connection to it, and less about the actual problems with social media, which they have not addressed and continue to hide behind. What's that chapter of the law, chapter 230 or something, that, you know, says these things are platforms and nothing can be done about them. Right. You know, a ban in Montana on TikTok, you know, just isn't going to get it done. Right. So it was covered this way on CNN and other networks, and CNN's been under fire and rightly so after the debacle that was the Trump interview. But then they've also made some lineup changes as well. Caitlin Collins, you know, who did the Trump interview, is seen as their bright young rising star, but you know, folks are pulling up, you know, what all she said when she worked for right-wing media now that she's being given a primetime slot. And you set it up very well in a post this week where you simply asked, and I think genuinely, what is CNN's lane these days?
Yeah, this is something I've been trying to figure out because, you know, they were the way that things have been in the last few years. You had MSNBC on the left, you had CNN pretty much like sitting there in the middle, and you had Fox News and, you know, OAN and Newsmax on the right, on the far right. So, and that seemed to be, you know, like if you talk about like market differentiation and various kind of business terms, they had found a place to be in the market. They had found a lane, and they seem to be shifting to be Fox Lite now. And I don't understand that seems to be a pretty crowded place to be right now. And so I don't understand I don't understand what their business strategy is.
Isn't it kind of like DeSantis is trying to be Trump-lite, and people are saying, well, why wouldn't we just go with Trump? Why wouldn't you just go with Fox?
I mean, that's a really good comparison, because all the Republicans are afraid to criticize Trump, but they're running against him. So they need to do what in business terms they call differentiation. And there's no differentiation there. And so why is CNN doing this? I mean, Pat, you may have seen the ratings. CNN was fourth behind Newsmax in recent nights. I mean, that's a scary place to be. It seems like, and I know just from social media and just talking to people, that people are not, who used to watch CNN, are not watching CNN. I think they've made a terrific mistake. And in that Twitter post, I was just trying to assess a little bit kind of why are they doing this? And I did arrive at a theory that maybe they're not doing it for financial reasons. Maybe they're doing it because John Malone, who's on the board and one of their main owners, is a Trump donor. And maybe they are willing to sacrifice short-term profits for long-term influence in, right-wing circles. I don't know. I mean, I compared it to what Twitter's doing, because Elon Musk is just throwing money in a bonfire right now, And so why is he doing that? I think he is sacrificing money for influence. He's gaining influence because now he's got this big megaphone to say, crazy things, but he's giving up money. And so I wonder whether CNN is on the same, is adopting the same strategy. I can't otherwise I don't have any theory for why they're behaving so self-destructively.
Yeah. I still don't feel like I'm seeing a big change in how national media is covering the debt ceiling crisis, or the hostage situation, as I'm more apt to describe it, and still describing it as a debate, as a standoff, and still giving, again, giving credibility to people who are actually willing to tank the economy, which I think you and others have said, that should be the story. That should be the national scandal going on here. And it hasn't appeared to change much in the past few days.
Well, they keep on calling it a negotiation. And I think Biden has been, forced to talk to them, but what do the Republicans have? I mean, they have their threat to tank the economy. So it is really kind of it's an extortion. It's a hostage situation. So, I mean, it's not like they're negotiating over, well, we'll give the Democrats, this tax on the rich. Democrats will give us some sort of whatever. But it's a very stark thing where the Republicans say, give us these concessions or we'll blow up the economy. I mean, it's shocking that that's what it's come to. And it's also really disappointing that the news media wants to pretend that this is a normal thing.
Yeah. Before I wrap up with the books, I do want to get to a fundraising letter that you put up from Senator John Kennedy, Republican of Louisiana. He wanted you to send him $500 to stop the left of Lenin neo-socialist pink-haired workers.
Pink-haired wokers. Yeah, wokers.
Wokers, sorry. Wokers.
Wokers, W-O-K-E-R-S. First I thought it was workers, but it's wokers. It's all those wokers, those pink-haired wokers. And if you just seen Senator,
I mean, this
John
is
Kennedy.
A rhetoric. I know he's a clown, but this is the rhetoric of a United States senator. Still,
well, let's be clear, Pat. John Kennedy is not a clown. John Kennedy, was a Rhodes Scholar. Yes. John Kennedy is pretending to be a clown. He's pretending to be just the old guy you meet down at the 7-Eleven, and that's why he's saying making comments about pink-haired people, because he wants his own supporters to think they're the normal ones. Everyone else is not, as if anybody gives a damn what color hair people have.
Yeah.
But subscribe. I get emails from, the right wing. It's my way of monitoring what they're doing, and their rhetoric is pretty nuts, and it's like, it's a lot of it is, oh, the world's about to end. Please send us $500.
Please send us money because it's going to end. right. And we're not even going to take time with the George Santos thing. It's still going to be around, and it's just ridiculous that the resolution to expel him didn't go through as it should have. So let's take this final minute and just learn more about the books that you've written and what you'd want folks to know about them.
Oh, well, I've written like 8 books I've co-authored with various people. They varied a lot. I wrote a a book about Wrigley Field. It was kind of a coffee table book. I partnered with the official photographer for the Cubs, and I wrote about the history of the Wrigley Field and the team. That was one book. I wrote a book called Aftershock, which was old photographs from World War II that the Army Signal Corps had taken, and we concentrated on the last year of the war and kind of the devastation. And I found that to be a really interesting book. And I've worked with two friends of mine who are photo historians on that. And I did most of the text mm-hmm. for the captions because I know a lot about history.
As we all have to in this business, which is a good thing. And maybe telling an accurate version of it and a complete version is all we're asking for.
Yeah.
Mark Jacob, always a pleasure. Have a great weekend.
Right. Talk to you later.
All right. When we come back, Dan Schumacher will be along. We'll talk a little weekend sports and other matters to wrap up a week here on Up North News Radio for this Friday. Again, you can sign up for our newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com. We'll be back.
Two Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX.
Coming up on Monday, we will have the Motherhood for Good folks here, and they're going to talk about the Moms Mental Health Initiative as part of Mental Health Awareness Month. And also, I think on Tuesday, I'm still getting it solidified, but I think Tuesday we will finally have Ruth Conniff and a couple of the other folks mentioned in her book, Milked, which is all about the Mexican workers who are keeping the Wisconsin dairy industry propped up, that if it weren't for all of these Mexican workers, nearly all of them undocumented, there wouldn't be a dairy industry in the state anymore, and how the farmers there are learning to not only appreciate the workers, but to make trips to Mexico to visit with their families and help support them because they know what a vital role they play, and hopefully be able to talk our politicians into finally getting off their butts when it comes to immigration and getting a visa program that can be year round, because this isn't a harvest time thing. Cows got to get milked all year long. And so I'm hoping to set that up for Tuesday morning. Chris from Sun Prairie is calling in a little bit about our discussion of national media. Chris, good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to call because when I heard MSNBC being called a left-leaning news organization, it kind of set my hair on end. They're a corporate news organization, as all of the TV news organizations are. I think if people want to find anything that's left-leaning, they might look at Democracy Now. They might look for Free Speech TV. But MSNBC is not a left-leaning news organization. We have Joe Scarborough and his wife. And I don't believe that they're left-leaning at all. So I just thought that I'd call and mention that because I really take issue with it. There are no left-leaning news organizations on the television in this country. I also would recommend people read The Guardian. I think that that's another decent news organization.
Those are great recommendations, Chris, and thank you very much. Thank you for calling our attention to that, because a lot of this is either performative or it's a market choice. You know, MSNBC comes from NBC News, and it's NBC News that, again, you know, lights my hair on fire with their both sidesism, which I think really borders more center right than anything. And again, that's a choice that they make. And so they also make choices for CNBC and for MSNBC that it will have a certain editorial bent. But, you know, Chris, you bring up some great alternative options if people really wanted to know what left media looked like. And I thank you very much for the call. We, as I was trying to think of some of the other ways to put it, you know, I come back to Up North News, and we are part of Courier Newsroom. And for folks who haven't heard me talk about this before, while we are, you know, described in short as a progressive news outlet, we really do subscribe to what you would call point of view journalism, which is, again, it is fact-based, but it is rooted in a certain set of values. And those values are right there on our website, you know, including things like we are pro-democracy. We think everybody should have the right to vote, you know, without suppression if they're eligible voters. And we talk about, you know, healthcare and other matters in there. Because that way you know where we're coming from, where we start as we approach our coverage on things. And the fact of the matter is, other media sites do the same thing, but they don't necessarily tell you their values. And the example I've used a few times before is there are newsrooms, their coverage is skewed by the way a news director feels, or an editor feels, or a general manager, a station manager, an advertising manager, but you never get to hear that because they don't tell you what their values are in shaping their newsroom. You know, we do. And that means that, you know, folks can listen to us. They may not always agree with what they say, but they also know we're not going to lie to them. We're going to say, here's the news from where we are coming from. And again, not everybody has to agree with everything they say. One example for me of that would be a guy named Bill out in Oconomowoc, who I appreciate when he calls in. And Bill's got some thoughts on that. Bill, good morning.
Yeah, thanks for talking about what you're talking about right now. Your station, if they haven't already, needs to receive an award of excellence for these reasons. You raise the bar high for integrity, honesty, diplomacy, and delivering the message. You're not an agenda-based radio station. You are a community radio station, which means, or civic, which means you look out for all the citizens in the state of Wisconsin and elsewhere now because you're expanding. But we need more communications like you're doing in on TV and all of that to have something that people can go to. Many people only want to listen to news they can use, but not news that they need to listen to. So again, my hat's off to you and all your colleagues. You really raised the bar of excellence. Thanks and have a great weekend.
Bill, thank you so much. I appreciate that greatly to hear comments from you and from other folks, some of whom maybe aren't as praiseworthy, that effusive, but still appreciate a good conversation. And that's what I've always enjoyed, especially up here in Chippewa County, where, you know, I won in a narrow election. I've lost in a narrow election. I've lost in a not so narrow election, but had a lot of fun along the way because you see in people how much they care and how much they want to be solutions oriented. Now, unfortunately, that doesn't always manifest itself in our legislative bodies or in our media choices, but it really does come back to the real people that we have to talk to, the real people who are affected, the real people who call in to stations like this and want to talk about issues. And we talk about things that a lot of consultants say, you know, not to talk about. We've spent a lot of time talking about the Joint Finance Committee with people not necessarily, you know, following the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, but it's important to Wisconsin. We spent a lot of time in the last hour talking about one bill related to shared revenue and one bill related to PFAS contamination. Now, in both cases, people on the other side of the political aisle from me genuinely want PFAS to be cleaned up and mitigated and prevented from happening again. And they genuinely want local governments to be able to be healthy, but they also believe that those things shouldn't be, you know, limitless. And we end up having, you know, good debates about the details. It's just that in the case of these two bills, this particular legislature is looking to swing too far to the right in terms of the removal of local control and the removal of control from the Department of Natural Resources to hold polluters accountable. These are nice, honest debates to have, and I appreciate being able to have them. I appreciate being able to talk about the lighter things as well. Dan Schumacher wasn't able to join us this morning, but we'll get him back on here, and we will cover more of the news of the day as well when we come back next week, and we'll talk about the folks from Motherhood for Good as well. In the meantime, your job is to go out and have a wonderful weekend. Earl Ingram's next in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay. Stephanie Miller in Madison. Todd Alba around the rest of the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.